Hello everyone and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life, which is a third space conversation, a third space project, a third space podcast, lots of many things. And we are, Lizzie, I'm really feeling this, we're coming up to the seventh anniversary of this long conversation every week, you and I, and I'm very glad to be in this with you again. So welcome to everyone, all of you who are with us, all of you who are just discovering us for the first time, wherever you are and whenever you are. It's very good to be with you.
Thank you, Justin. And we have a very wonderful source this week by an author called Maggie Smith. And this source got brought to us, Justin, by one of our current cohort of coaches on our year-long program. And I want to say thank you, because at the beginning of the program, as we know, our students do this wonderful exercise of looking at different pieces of life of different sources that could be a source that they could use in their coaching work. And this is one of those things. So this is the kind of thing that we might bring to a client wondering about their development and the conversation that we're in with somebody who's come to us wondering about something in their life, or in a big breakdown, or in a difficulty, or in some kind of opening, as we would call it. So this is called Some People Will Ask, and it's an excerpt from You Could Make This Place Beautiful, which is a title of a book by Maggie Smith. And it goes like this. Why are you telling these stories? Why air your dirty laundry? Someone will ask this, or if they don't ask, they'll think it. Maybe you're thinking it now. How do I answer? So I could say what happened to me is mine. I could say that suffering equals pain plus resistance, and I'm no longer resisting, no longer holding it in, letting it fester. And why would you expect me or anyone to grit my teeth and quietly carry my story? I could say that there's a cost to carrying your truth but not telling it. I could say women have been doing this for decades and look where it's landed us. I could say I've gone and lost my narrative and lost not only my understanding of the future, but also my understanding of the past. And this is how I'm trying to find it. Who's calling this dirty anyway? It's just lived in.
Thank you, Lizzie. So this is Some People Will Ask from You Could Make This Place Beautiful by Maggie Smith. And we will put the text of this in the show notes for the podcast and on our turningtowards.life website and with the YouTube. Why are you telling these stories? Why air your dirty laundry? Someone will ask this, or if they don't ask, they'll think it. Maybe you're thinking it now. How do I answer? I could say what happened to me is mine. I could say that suffering equals pain plus resistance, and I'm no longer resisting, no longer holding it in, letting it fester. And why would you expect me or anyone to grit my teeth and quietly carry my story? I could say there's a cost to carrying your truth but not telling it. I could say women have been doing this for decades and look where it's landed us. I could say I've gone and lost my narrative and lost not only my understanding of the future, but also my understanding of the past, and this is how I'm trying to find it. Who's calling this laundry dirty anyway? It's just lived in.
Thank you, Justin, for reading that to me. And thank you, Maggie, for being the originator of these inviting and important words. I think, Justin, we often talk about the kind of bigger kind of cultural narratives that we all live inside of all the time. And many of them serve us in lots of ways. And many of them serve us and don't serve us, depending on what we're about in the world. And this whole thing of quietly gritting my teeth and carrying my story is so strong. So many times I feel this in the world, that there's like an invisible mechanism or something that is a communicable thing that's like don't air your dirty laundry in public thing. No one else can know what's really going on. We have to keep up appearances or make ourselves into something that's appealing in the culture that we're in the street we live in the system we're in and the role we're in the family that we're in even. And I'm really appreciating this invitation of re-narrating, retelling this story of what's going on in our lives, not as dirty laundry, but as just laundry that's been used. Because it's like there's no shame in something being used, but there is shame in it being dirty. And something used is feels more true to me. Like we've all been we're being used by life. We've got stains. There's marks all over us in our history. And that makes us who we are, rather than that there's something wrong with us. And that's a really different story to tell. I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday about our grandparents, and three of my grandparents I didn't know as an adult. So I just knew them as one of them I didn't know at all. And the other two, I only knew them up until I was about 11. And so I didn't know their distortions. I didn't know their difficulties. I didn't know that in my own way of perceiving as an adult. And I was talking about how they got frozen in the romance of they were my grandparents and they just did whatever I wanted them to do came and visited occasionally and always used to play buses with me and, those kind of stories. And I was really feeling into the grandparent that I did know and how I, by the time he died, he was 96 and I was 30 something. And I really knew all of his stuff. And that's what had him be a person in the world in a completeness for me, rather than this is just kind of a romantic notion of him. And I feel like it's so easy to complain about each other and think that we're all a nightmare and oh my gosh, all the way he does that really annoys me and all of that. But then when I kind of zoom out a little bit, all of the quirks and all of the madness are the thing that has a person be fruity and spice filled and all of that really matters. And that's a really different way of holding something is it's used rather than it's dirty. And I think we could all do with more of this being in our common cultural narrative. And I'm really grateful for Maggie writing about this and it being in the world and a way that all of the people in the world, when you write a book, it's there for everyone, might get to retell the story of what it is to be open and to be real and to not be managing our image so much that nobody really sees our usedness.
Thinking, I mean, there's so much to respond to in what you said, Lizzie, particularly when I think about grandparents, think about different generational responses in different cultures to this question, and how much of this is cultural as well. That every culture, every personal culture, every family culture, every organizational culture, every societal culture will have different places that the boundary is about what can be said when to whom. And maybe the question, one way I hear the question that you're asking and that Maggie's raising is where and when should that boundary be? Because the place actually that I started with it was wanting to respect the places where there are boundaries where they serve. So there are clearly places where our choices about what we bring about us, what we bring to bear about ourselves, and what we share about ourselves can really share our what's the word? Sorry, support our shared endeavors. So there are places to bring that of me that establishes solidity, simplicity, straightforwardness, and getting on with things. Right? There definitely are. And if I tell all of these stories there, I don't necessarily serve that place well. I turn it into a different kind of conversational disclosive space. And to talk about where those to really talk about the boundaries, it seems to, in me anyway, to be helpful to respect that there are places where those boundaries make lots of sense. And then it asks the question, and where do they not? And so I think one of the things that has been really excellent in the part of the world and the time in which we live, Lizzie, has been people like Maggie, who I guess must be 35 or 40 years older than me. I'm not quite sure how old Maggie is now, but who came from a generation even before, saying some of the places we've got these boundaries in place are the wrong places, and then really talking about what can be on the side of sharing more and more of ourselves. And the problem with the boundary being in the wrong place is that this taps into a, well, one way of talking about it, it taps into a conversation we were having last time we spoke about people being processes, about us always being moving, like being like whirlpools, and is that to be a human is so rich and full and complex, full of joys and pains and uncertainties and change and discovery and losses and gainings. And like in a way, when we look at ourselves and our lives most closely, in the end, all we have is experience. Yeah, I have a body, but I know I have a body because I experience having a body, and there are other people in my life, and I know that they're there because I experience them, and they know that I'm there because they experience me. And I think what Maggie is inviting us into is the possibility that we might treat our experience, whatever it is, as something sacred and of worth and of value, and not to mistake that there are boundaries in some places for imagining that that means that what we've experienced in our life is somehow ought to be hidden away and kept secret and kept out of view. And then the last bit that I've got for now is when the ordinariness of human experience, with all of its range and all of its joy and all of its pain and all of its complexity, is hidden from view, we create an enormous kind of suffering in one another because we feel alone. When I feel like my experience is only my experience and it puts me outside of humanity, then I'm being unbelonged. And one of the ways that I can get to belong is by you telling me your experience and me knowing that it's yours and yours alone, but finding out that it is resonant in some very, very important ways, whatever you experience, with my experience and me bringing mine, and us saying to one another, I see you and you're human, and here we are together, as a way that we get rebelonged together. And that's what I think, that's when I listen to you, it sounds to me like that's my way of understanding you, and it's my way of understanding Maggie, is let's belong together in the ordinariness of all of this craziness that it is to be a human. It's bonkers and wonderful. And so it has definitely been my experience in entering over the years into this territory that we call coaching, that I'm not even sure if it's always exactly the right word for what we do, but it's the best word we have, is it's afforded endless possibilities for me to hear about the insides of other people's life and for me to share the insides of my life. And I know that it's one of the most healing and developmental and stretching and growing things that I've ever attended my time to.
What's surprising for me, Justin, is that, you know, we've just been in a conversation outside of this conversation talking about me and my development and my unfolding and what I know to be true of that experience and lots of other experiences that I have where I get to talk about my life and find language for my inner experience. Is it just the very act of doing that, regardless of the content, changes things? I feel different when I have spoken out my inner reality and tried to find language for and have endeavored for someone else to understand me in service of our relationship or in service of what we're trying to do together or whatever. And it really matters to do that. And it's so huge that we don't do that just as a matter of ordinariness. We just don't do that. And I feel like we are so vast, we are so complex, and we have so much here that's latent, that's ready, that's we may not even have language for until we have language for it, because we hear other people. And as you say, we are these unfolding processes. And just the act of speaking out my reality and finding language for it completely shifts and changes my experience of being a human being. And that's an incremental something. It doesn't look like an instant something that happens, but it's a practice. It's an ongoingness. It's just like this turning towards life conversation has completely changed me. I feel completely changed by what we've done. I don't know how we've done it for so long, or how on earth we even started doing it in the first place in one way. And it's so ordinary that you might think it's nothing because we're just having a conversation. But the impact of me finding language every time we gather to express what my response is to the thing that either of us have brought is in itself a completely life-giving practice of self-expression. And what it's like, what are we here for if we're not, we have these mouths and we have all this language and we're so linguistic. You know, I can already tell, you know, my little son is 10 months old, and he is an affordance. He's an opportunity. He's linguistical. I can feel his languageness. It's so inbuilt in humanness. And for us to not use that to explore ourselves and to find our way into finding out who we are, to not have language between us that allows us to learn about our who-ness and our humanity, seems really bonkers in this moment. And there are so many things to stop us doing that with one another. And as you say, there are places where that's not what's called for. And there are places where it would be so wonderful to create them so that was what was called for. So that we had places to go and ways to feel ordinary in the doing of it. And as you said, I experienced that too in this coaching thing that you and I do. The more I talk and the more people talk to me, I feel like my life fills up with human experience, whether it's mine or another person's. I don't feel separate to any of it. It's what it, all of it is what it is to be human. And that feels endlessly compelling and important to be witness to and to receive in this life.
See, it seems to me that one of the things that we're here for, Lizzie, as experiencing conscious, sentient beings, is to be witness to life as it unfolds inside us and around us, and then to share it with one another, to carry it and to share it. Because evolution could easily have gone not to have consciousness. Everything could work fine. We could be empty shells reproducing mechanically. That would work, but it's not what we are, despite the fact that some people say it is what we are, despite the fact that there's, which I can never, it seems so logically absurd to suggest that our experience is some kind of illusion when I'm experiencing it and here I am. But there's a line from a David White poem that to be human is to carry what is hidden as a gift to others. So I'm really with you with this, that despite what I said about there being absolutely necessary places for these boundaries, the deeper work is for us to more and more to understand ourselves and one another and to bring the gifts of that, the fruits of that, which includes, as Maggie's saying, not treating it as dirty laundry, but treating it as what we've lived in. And I know that when anybody else who will make themselves trustable and trustworthy creates the space to say, how are you doing and what's happening and what's it like to be you, it's sacred. So I've learned this also to ask this. I found this, and I hope people will do this with me next time I'm experiencing a deep grief. And I've learned to do this with people who have just lost somebody they love, is just to ask, What's this like for you right now? And it gives the opportunity for someone to say, if they wish, here's what it's like to honor and dignify and sanctify the particular unique experience that they have. And then it also, of course, it touches me and it moves me and it changes me. So on the one hand, there's the deepening and the life-givingness of it that in some cultures we've lost. You know, if I trace sort of UK culture, as far as I understand it, from the mid-Victorian through the First World War, through the Second World War, people learned to hold all of this back, and we're sort of undoing it now, reclaiming it. But also, Lizzie, I've said this to you before, and I've said it here, so it's public. In 2012, I was seriously ill, and I know that a huge cause of my serious illness was the magnitude of fear that I was carrying inside me and not sharing with anybody. And we know it from a ton of research and a ton of first-hand experience that holding our experiences private and not finding places, obviously not everyone can find them all the time because there aren't always safe people around to do this with. But what happens when there are people who will make it safe to bring what's on the inside to the outside, it heals us. And in my case, might have saved me enormous risk had I felt able to do it. So it's sort of like I'm wanting to talk about it both as sacred, healing, necessary work of relationship and becoming ever more ourselves and ever more human to speak and to listen to one another. And I also want to talk about it as life-saving. I think it's literally life-saving to find ways, particularly to find ways for each of us to be the ones who will hear and who will hear and honor the experience of someone else and learn from it without having to fix it and without having to change it. Sometimes fixing is needed and sometimes changing is needed, but the basic thing is being one who will receive so that Maggie doesn't have to say, explain what that this isn't airing dirty laundry, but talking about what it is to live in a life.
Yeah, the word that's really resonating in the moment for me, Justin, is welcome. Like, what do I need to do to be a welcome to the experience of another person as somebody who asks and who's curious and who's interested, and also then someone who can allow what wants to be said and say thank you and receive something, let it be spoken and let it have a place in the world. And just as I was saying before, I know how powerful that is from my own experience of doing that with you today, you know, of saying who I feel I am today, who I have been, what my inner wrangles are, and how just the saying of it does a massive thing. And of course, there's more in what you say in response and the conversation that ensues. And but it, just in that beginning bit of me telling you there's this thing, it's happening, I find I struggle here, I have difficulty here, and this hurts, or I don't know what to do. In the saying of it, the whole issue, the whole matter shifts itself around, and it's a really powerful, important something that happens there. So I want to thank you for being one who I can air my dirty laundry with. Use Maggie's word, and not feel like it's dirty, but just feel like it's my laundry and everything needs attending to, and you're attending to me and I'm attending to me in the saying of it because you're here. So I'm really grateful for that, and I know that this is probably our time to end for today's conversation, and I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank the person on the PCC who brought this source, who I'll message and tell. Thank you too. And thank everybody for being with us and for being community around this incredible endeavor that we're in, Justin, will turn it towards life. So thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Everyone, see you soon.